Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Diana Nyad is our guest this hour of the program. For 10 years, she was the greatest long-distance swimmer in the world. In 1978, she attempted to swim from Cuba to Florida, and after being in the water for 41 hours and 49 minutes, she fell short of her goal due to strong currents and bad weather. In 1979, she stroked the longest swim in history, making the 102.5-mile journey from the Bahamas to Florida. She has also broken numerous world records, including what had been a 50-year mark for circling Manhattan Island in a new time of 7 hours and 57 minutes. She is a member of the National Women's Hall of Fame and the International Swimming Hall of Fame. And as you know, she's done a lot of other work as well. She's been a sports broadcaster, a sports commentator for ABC's Wide World of Sports, Fox Sports Television, a travel writer for National Public Radio. And she tried this twice in the past couple months. I'm sure you're familiar with this. In September, it was her third attempt to achieve the dangerous record-breaking dream of a marathon open water swim from Cuba to the shores of Florida. And she got stung, and it was really horrendous. She'll tell us about this, and was not able to continue because box jellyfish stung her, and those are potentially life-threatening stings. And she had an asthma attack when she attempted this in August. So the ocean is still there, as she says, and the dream is still there. So even though she's in her 60s now, I think she's, even though, you know, I mean, she's still young, she will probably attempt something else. I heard her speak at an American Heart Association event a couple of years ago, and she's incredibly inspirational as well. So we're happy to have her with us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Diana Nyad, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Kathleen, it's my pleasure. How are you today?
Well, I am fine. How are you?
I'm good. Is it full on winter in Wisconsin yet, or not too bad?
Well, let's just say you can't swim outside.
Yeah, I guess. What a beautiful state, though. It's one of my favorite places in this country.
It is. It is a beautiful state. Well, I was just so captivated by what you were doing in September and August, and it looked like it was horrendous what happened. But what the heck? Here you were. Now you're in your early 60s, and you were out there swimming again. Why?
You know, it took me by surprise. It really did. I was the typical swimmer when I was 30, way back in the day. I retired with, you know, some of those records you talk about in the record books, and, you know, felt very satisfied that I had, you know, had a great career as an athlete, time to grow up and move on and become an adult and make a living and, you know, join the real world and all that. And I just we had the burnout. I had the swimmer's burnout. Mm. You know, it's a lonely sport, and it's a sport of discipline, and it's a sport of sensory deprivation. You know, at least if you're a cyclist or a runner, you're putting in the long miles, but you look at the beautiful trees and the lakes, and you maybe chat with a friend for a minute and whatnot. When you're swimming, you know, you're alone. And a lot of people swim for that reason. You know, people who swim for their exercise or swim recreationally, they love that meditative aspect that
right.
You don't see anything, you don't hear anything, you're just hearing the swish of the water, and it's very calming. But you try doing that, you know, 6 hours a day training for 20 years, and you're burned out. You just don't want to see another pool. So I, Kathleen, literally did not swim for 31 years.
Isn't that? I read that. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and I never missed it for a second. I just never thought, if you and I had been friends all during that time and you'd said to me, you think you'll ever, you know, I don't mean compete, I mean just, you know, for exercise, think you'll ever get in the pool again? I'd say, Kathleen, you couldn't pay me $1 million to take one more stroke. I'm done.
Yeah. And so you were done, but you try to swim from Cuba to Florida. So you
just, I know it sounds crazy, but a couple of years ago when I was turning 60, and I never had any problem with any age, you know, 50, 55, 59, I just been living, you know, just living, dancing as fast as I can is what they say, you know, every day as I go along. And, you know, aging has not bothered me. You know, cosmetic aging, the breasts sag a little bit and the wrinkles come to the face a little bit, and there's nothing you can do about it all. And that's not the point anyway. You age as gracefully as you can, and you keep your spirit and you keep your body fit. So don't get me wrong, during those 31 years of not swimming, you know, I have a fitness company called BravaBody.com. I would ride a 100-mile bike ride every Friday, you know, yoga on the beach, you know, the whole thing. I was have always been, you know, valued fitness in my life, very high level of fitness, just no swimming. So here I am, I turned 60, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Oh. I honestly went to into an existential funk.
Oh, did you?
Oh, I did. I thought, my God, my mom had just died.
She was two.
And I was thinking, you know what? In this life, it's so darn short. You can tell the young people in our lives how quickly the whole thing goes by. And they why should they believe you? We didn't. You know, when you're 20, you don't think, oh, my God, I don't have much time left.
Right.
You know, that's not the way you think. When you're 60 and your mom dies at 82, you think, you know what? I'm going to blink. And I'm going to be 70.
You'll be 82. I know what you're saying.
Blink again. I'm going to be 80, and then it's all going to be over.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started thinking, and my God, what have I done with my life? But you know what, Kathleen? I don't mean so much like if you take out a ledger, a piece of paper, and say, well, did you get in any Hall of Fames? And did you break any records? And did you, you know, work any Olympic Games as an announcer? Yeah, I had all those things on the ledger, and that's fine. And they were all great experiences. I just mean I had spent so much time in sort of a negative mental space, beating myself up. Why didn't I do this better? Why didn't I do that? Why didn't I save my marriage? Why didn't I stop the sexual abuse when I was a kid? Why didn't I do this? And just that little monkey chatter, that negative monkey chatter, then I know a lot of your listeners know what I'm talking about. A lot of us spend a lot of our day, you know, just in, you know, he isn't going to like me. Why doesn't the boss treat me better at work? Why doesn't, instead of just solving your problems, being in the present and moving forward. All during this swim, I used the word onward. Every email that I'd write to the team, all the T-shirts we made up, you know, the bracelets that we would make for people online, all that stuff, the word was onward. And it means, yeah, out in the ocean, onward. Take another stroke. Get to the other shore, but it meant in life also. I'm sick of wallowing around, stewing about my past. And once I turned 60 and was in this funk, I decided, you know what? I'm going to do something. I'm going to do something extraordinary. And it's going to take everything of me. I don't know what it's going to be yet. I'm going to think of something that is going to make me have to dig down and be the best person I can every day so that there's no time to spend wasting it thinking about what I didn't do right in the past. I got to take steps forward every minute of every waking hour of every day. And one day I was in my car. This was August 2009, so it was two years and a couple of months ago. And I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that elusive swim that I didn't do back in my 20s. It was the only swim I didn't make. It was in my imagination. You know, I'm the one who dreamed of this Cuba to Florida thing, and I thought, can I do it at 60? Do I have it in the shoulders? Do I have it in the heart? It's a tough sport to train for, as we said. And I looked myself in the mirror, and I said, you do have it. Let's get going. And and you know what? From that day forward, I am out of that syndrome of the regrets and the, you know, wallowing in what I don't do right in life. I'm out of that. I am just moving onward.
Good for you.
Yeah, it feels good.
Good for you. It's a good way to live because it is short. You're right. It sounds trite, but before you know it, you're dead.
Well,
you know,
that's
and that's it.
It sounds trite, but I tell you, these people, 1.3 million people wound up rooting for me on Twitter, et cetera, on that final day of the second swim you were talking about in September. And you know what? It turns out, as you read through all the Twitters and the Facebook comments and the you know, blog comments on the site and people who write me, et cetera, these are not, as a general rule, they're not swimmers. They're not sports fans at all. These are people, as you just said, what a great way to live life.
Right.
That's what people are getting from this. That's what people are connecting with me about. I did it for me. I wanted to help my own life.
Right.
And it wasn't so much about setting the athletic record, although I won't lie to you. I'd love to get across that thing. And I'm not going to stop till I do. I hope you and I aren't talking when I'm 80. I'm still trying. I am sure I can do it, but I you know, you got to have a lot of luck. There's a lot of Mother Nature out there too. But the end thing I wanted to say about people resounding, you know, sort of and kind of reverberating with what I'm about, isn't about the swimming. You know, they don't understand the swimming, and they probably don't care if I ever do it to the other shore. What they witnessed was a person living large, living, you know, with
yes.
fierce intensity. And passion, and not wallowing around at all. And that's what they write me, that's they're starting to do that with their lives. They're digging out that novel out of the drawer that was in there for 20 years and working on it again. You know, they just sick of sitting on the couch feeling depressed.
Right. Good for you. I'm glad you've inspired people in all those ways. You know, it was no, as somebody wrote about this journey from Cuba to Florida, somebody wrote, not only was this a huge thing to attempt, but you also picked these two countries and this space, and you must have done it somewhat intentionally, from Cuba to Florida, to get both governments to agree to allow you to enter those waters and swim. You had to do some negotiating, I would think, didn't you?
I tell you, you know, you think every day, you know, you can pick up the papers, you know, there where you live, the New York Times, you know, no matter what, you pick up the American papers and you read about how Cuban-American relations are opening and, you know, it's going to be just easy as pie, just, you know, pick up the phone and get on the Internet and book your trip to Havana and have a good time. Well, we're not there yet, believe me. You know, there are, shall we say, illegal ways to go. You know, as American citizens, you can fairly easily fly through, you know, Mexico or the Bahamas and other places and get over there and quietly, you know, a couple people, spend a few days and enjoy yourself and see the beauty. That is one. Have you been?
No, I've not been to Cuba. I've been by it on a boat, but I haven't been there. I'd like to go.
I tell you, I've been all over the world. I've been very lucky. I'm very well traveled. And, you know, corners of Africa, the interior of Borneo, down to Patagonia, all the big cities, you know, you can name. I've had a chance to go there because of work, et cetera, and sport. And I think Cuba may be my favorite foreign
Is it?
Land.
Ah.
It's a beautiful, intelligent people, and the dance, the architecture, the value system. It's an inspiring place to be. And, you know, you asked why I picked this place, and I just, you know, I grew up down in Fort Lauderdale, and I had many Cuban friends. And like many people, not just in Florida, you know, there's a mystique about the country of Cuba because they've been so isolated all these years and because of all their talents. You know, I think that there are millions of people all over the world, like you just said, they'd love to go there, who have this mystique about it, and they'd love to see it, see the beautiful buildings and the old American cars. And, you know, it's like a picture postcard, the town of Havana.
Hmm.
And so anyway, because of the isolation starting in 1959, I don't know, I think you and I could sit down and spread out a map of the world, and I'm not sure we could today find a more famous, a more historic passage in modern times across a sea than Cuba to Florida. I mean, look how many people have tried to escape there and make it over here.
Right.
So, you know, it used to be the English Channel. 100 years ago, the continent of Europe and the English Isles, you know, the deep histories, to, you know, dating back to Charlemagne, you know, lay in that piece of water. And that's why 100 years ago, not that people don't swim the English Channel still, but it's a little bit dated. It's a little bit passé. And I am just to have it in my imagination that swimming this passage, you know, looking across at that horizon and imagining if you could swim this 100-plus miles is just the most exciting body of water on the earth today. So it's gotten under my skin, Kathleen. I just can't leave it until I get across.
You're going to do it again.
I got to do it again. I tell you the truth, I wish I could do it right now. Because I'm in shape now because of those, you know, those two incredibly long swims in August and in September. But the problem is the waters have cooled off already. You know, it's they've come into fall, and so it's much cooler, and I have to wait till next summer. And that's tough.
That's all right. You'll be okay. You're not 80 yet. It might be harder at 80. You can
do it. No, you're right. It's going to be okay. People have worse problems, don't they?
Yeah. Now, how can you? The pictures. You look like you were really in pain this last go around, and I'm wondering if there's a way to be better protected against those box jelly stings that could have been lethal.
Yeah, they are. Well, I've learned now they're the most deadly animal in the sea, more so than the shark. You want to face a shark and take your chances that you're going to be able to bop him on the nose, that maybe he's just not going to be interested in you as food. You want that more than you want to be stung by a box jellyfish. Mm. And you know what? Those jellyfish did not live in these waters. I wasn't prepared for them. You know, there's Portuguese men of war. They're plenty painful and can cause serious effects. You know, there's some jellyfish, and believe me, I'm getting to be an expert on jellyfish now. I never thought this would be my area of expertise, but, you know, I'm talking to the top, you know, jellyfish researchers in the world, and I'm learning a lot about them. But the Portuguese men of war, and if your listeners know, it's that blue bubble. They may have seen it. It literally, the blue bubble floats along the surface, and that's not what stings. It's the tentacles underneath that live within that blue bubble and then stretch out and, you know, float around underneath. Well, some jellyfish just sting your skin, and they can hurt like heck, and you'll scream out and let out a couple of obscenities maybe. But there are other species, like the box jellyfish, like the Portuguese men of war, that do much more damage, because when their tentacles sting you, they have hundreds of thousands of little barbs. They're actually you know, piercing the skin, and they're shooting their venom into your central nervous system. So what they're doing to a fish is stopping the heart. And for most fish, you know, it would have to be a very large fish for it to not die instantly when they're stung by the box jellyfish. Many people have died stung by the box jellyfish, too. Especially if they're out swimming by themselves. Australia is where they really, you know, habitate. New Zealand, Australia. So a lot of people there have been stung, and they can't make it to shore. They can't save themselves, because what's happening is that tentacle shooting those barbs and harpoons of venom into your system, the venom is traveling up into your heart central nervous system, stopping you down. For me, what it did was it was trying to paralyze my lungs. And I started to not be able to breathe, and I couldn't reach my arms out in a full stroke anymore. It's kind of taking a little crab-like stroke. And the pain of the sting itself, Kathleen, I am telling you, it's something like science fiction. I'm pretty pain-resistant. I've had kidney stones. You know, I've had some pain. And this is, you cannot, I can't verbally describe it. It swept over me as if I had been dipped in hot, burning oil all at the same time. You don't feel like the tentacle like slowly wrapping around you. It's like whoosh, you're on fire. And I guess, you know, I don't have much memory of it because you know, I was just dealing with survival at that point. But I guess the people on board, as a matter of fact, I'm sitting down to take a look at the footage today, because my head handler Bonnie said that she will not do this again with me. She witnessed what she thought was close to, you know, death. And unless I look at the footage, she said the first step you got to take is sit down with me and look at the footage that the documentary filmmaker made, and I want you to watch. You're yelling out, fire, 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 I'm on fire,
Diana.
Help me, somebody help me. And I was counting, and I was saying, I'm paralyzed, I can't breathe, I can't take another stroke. Well, you know what? I did. I swam for 41 hours through that sting and through another sting the next night. They come up to the surface at dusk more than anything. And my trainer said, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not saying no for sure. But the first thing is, I want you to witness what I went through in watching this and being helpless in helping you. So, yeah, it was really intense and extreme. But you're right. I can't just go out and say, oh, well, I'm tough. I'll go through another one. I know better now. I'm going to have to develop some kind of suit. I'm going to have to develop something that will allow me to swim through them, get stung, and not have those barbs penetrate my skin.
Is there such a suit, or does it have to be invented?
You know, I think we're working with both right now. I've got these jellyfish experts I told you about sending me suits from all over the world. When I find one that I can actually swim in, first of all, I'm not allowed a wetsuit. No neoprene allowed. That's a flotation device, so that's a cheat.
I see.
I'm allowed other kinds of suits, like maybe like the Olympic swimmers wear, you know, that they call them the skin suits.
Right.
Lycra, they make a suit in Australia because they're so prevalent now there, the box jellyfish, called the stinger suit. And but it hasn't been made for swimming with a full range of motion for a long time. And so they're sending me one of those. I'm going to try it. It's made for more like families who are on vacation and want to snorkel a little, and scientists who are going out to gather research and stuff like that. So I've got to test that. But the guy who's in charge of open water swimming worldwide these days, he's in charge of the history, the rules. His name is Steve Munitonis. And he, listen to this. I want to ask if you would volunteer for this job, Kathleen.
Right.
He says that when I find a suit that I can swim in, that's comfortable enough, that's not neoprene, he will put it on and dive into the jellyfish tank at the Monterey Aquarium.
Whoa!
Yeah, where they have the box jellies, the Portuguese, they have everything. And he will allow himself to be stung by all of these in this suit and see if he, you know, doesn't feel a thing. So better him than me.
Right.
And that's where we're heading right now.
Right. If he's going to do that, let him do it. Whew. Diana Nyad is our guest this hour. What a story, huh? She said she couldn't find words to describe what it was like. I think she found the words to describe what it was like to be experiencing those stings. She, I'm sure that many of you, I'm a swimmer, so I am just captivated by what she has tried to do. And I also heard her speak, as I think I said, a couple of years ago at the American Heart Association in Milwaukee. She's a whale of a speaker, really inspirational. So I was keyed into, as millions were, she said, who followed this attempt in September and also in August of this year, her swim from Cuba to Florida, which she had to abandon both attempts, once because of an asthma attack in August and then these horrendous stings, which, you know, almost killed her. So she's got to figure out a way to keep those from biting her and her body suffering the horrendous effects of those. And she's on her way to doing that because she's not going to give up. She wants to do this. She wants to do this marathon open water swim from Cuba to the shores of Florida. Many of you, I know, are familiar with her other long distance swimming and her really interesting career. Turning 60, hit her like a ton of bricks. She decided to do some small thing like train after she'd been out of the water for 31 years. Join our conversation. We'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. Do you think she should attempt this again? Will you follow her next summer? Or do you think that maybe it's time to pick up some other kind of challenge? Or you may have questions about how you train for this kind of event. We'd love to hear from you, and I'm sure she would too. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow on the program during this hour, Argentina just had elections a couple weeks ago and they reelected their woman president by a large margin. It's interesting because their economy is just flourishing and they've been able to narrow the gap between the very rich and the poor in that country. People are buying things. They run a risk of inflation. We thought that we would look at a country that's doing quite the opposite of what's happening in this country and other countries. So we'll look at Argentina. That'll be interesting, don't you think? Tomorrow at 10 and at 9 tomorrow, the former governor, two-term governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, will be with us. She is the author of A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs in America's Economic Future. Diana Nyad is our guest, and we are going to welcome phone calls. Our lines are filled, but keep the number in head, 800-486-8655. Bill in Sun Prairie is our first caller. Hi, Bill.
Hi. It's a great honor to be on the program and listen to your guest. I was one of the millions that watched her progress and also was cheering her on. I just wanted to share a little story and ask a question. I'm 69 years old, and I've looked back over my life, and I've seen that a great deal of things I've done and I still do a lot today in terms of writing, and I've published two books, and I do a lot of exercising, and I'm still very active. But as I look back over my life, I saw that a lot of what I've done was trying to be accepted. I had a very abusive childhood, and I was always trying to prove myself to others. And then I realized I was trying to prove myself to myself. And I just wondered if your guest can relate to that at all, because I think what she did is so inspirational and so wonderful. And if she's doing it because she loves it, that's great. But if she's doing it out of some need to prove herself, then I'd ask her to question that.
Well, all right. There's a good comment, Diana.
Bill, that is deep.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, thousands of people listening to you today are going to say, I know that feeling. I know that what that is. I did suffer an abusive childhood as well, was sexually abused twice, first by the father and then by the coach. And so I don't know exactly what the details of your childhood were, but I hear you when you say the words. And, you know, as smart as we can be, and you sound very smart, you know, as together as we can be, as fortunate as we can be after those childhoods to have all kinds of opportunities and privileges, the sting, the deep cellular level sting of being hurt as a child can last a lifetime. So it's funny you ask this, because just yesterday I'm just doing an interview with the New York Times Magazine, and we got deep into how is it different this time swimming 30-some years later than it was then. And then I tell you, all those words you're saying right now, and all my life was about needing to feel special. I needed that pat on the back. I needed people. I would get in a cab and in New York City, and I had to get that cab driver, that kind of anonymous person that he and I are never going to see each other ever again in our lives. And I was hell-bent during that cab ride to make him respect me, to make him know how great I was and what I've accomplished. And all that swimming back then was about, look at me. You've got to know how special I am. You know, and it was to make up for that childhood abuse. And all these 30 years later, I guess I've been loved by a few good people. I have the dearest friends in the world. I hope when I die that on my gravestone it says, she was the greatest friend you'd ever want to have.
Aww.
That's my goal in life, right there.
Mm.
And I just have grown up. I'm not saying that, you know, that childhood abuse, you know, is not a part of me anymore, because as people say, you are only, you know, the sum of all the things that have ever happened to you. But it sure isn't at the surface anymore. And I don't swim for that, you know, public acclaim and pat on the back and attention. I had to look myself in the mirror 2 years ago when I got this dream and say, do you really want to do this? Because this is going to be tough stuff. And if only your five closest people in your life are standing on that beach at the end, and nobody else in the whole world knows about this, that has to be enough. And I decided it was. And still, you know, people like you, Bill, went through this with me, and Kathleen. You cared about this. It meant something to you. You rooted for me, and wow, that gave me a shot in the arm. You know, it's nice to know that someone appreciates and is getting something for their lives out of what you're doing. It's nice. But still, I still had to say to myself, this is too tough to do this for anybody else. This has got to be for you.
Yeah.
And now we're coming into a third attempt, which literally is a fourth attempt, if you can't count the one back in the 70s next summer, to train again for it. And, you know, maybe the public's going to be weary. Maybe next year people are going to pick up the newspaper and say, you know what, I had enough of this already. You know, we followed her twice. We gave her a chance. You know, I'm off onto something else. I don't care about it anymore. That might happen. I still have to want to do it. And I do it now much more out of awe at being alive. You're 69. I'm 62. Kathleen, I don't know how old you are, but we're all on a one-way street. We're not going back. We can't do any of that time that we spent, Bill, needing the attention and, you know, acting out of, let's say, immaturity and motives that just doesn't make a person happy. We can't go back, but we can sure go forward. And it sounds like you and I are in a place where we're just waking up every day and grabbing the gusto the best we can for our own lives. And so I think I'm there. You know, I'd like to think I'm there, but I won't lie to you and tell you that it doesn't feel good to have people root for you and appreciate you.
Of course. Of course it does.
I admit that, too, you know.
Sure. Bill, thank you so much for the call. Janice in La Crosse. Hi, Janice.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen, and just thank you so much. I'm so excited, Diana, to be able to just praise you and just congratulate you. And I'm 63 myself, anyway, and have always been very active athletically in my life. But at 63, Diana, I'm like, oh, I'm so happy I can get up and walk or ride a bike or, you know, play a little tennis. I'm happy. So I just want to say to you, you've done it all, in my opinion. And honestly, I feel like saying just what you just said, Diana, you've done it all. You don't need to prove anything to anybody. I mean, you've been way beyond anything anybody normally could be doing, believe it. So I just think, I hate to say rest on your laurels, but I really do believe that, Diana. I know you have your personal goals, but it's like, okay, come on, man. We can just stop now and say, okay, thank you, Lord. I'm so happy I'm alive. Thank you, God. And I don't need to push the button and push the limit and kill myself.
Well, you know what? I appreciate that perspective, and believe me, a lot of people close to me in my life would love me to get that perspective. You know, the discussion always in life, isn't it, is about the journey and the destination. So we take these journeys. We decide to raise children, and you know, get an education, work a job, you know, that is meaningful, and sometimes. Many times things don't work out. You know, people are disappointed. Look at America today, you know, with the job issues we're having. I'd love to hear that conversation with your ex-governor tomorrow, Kathleen, in terms of, you know, her book and what mm-hmm. she thinks about what's happened, you know, to the crash in work opportunities, you know, for good Americans.
It's terrible. Yes.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. That's the worst issue we've got. And I actually, as a little aside, I was just in New York and went down to, you know, Occupy Wall Street. And, okay, those people may not make a big difference. Laws may not change. Jobs may not create. But I admire them for sleeping out on the streets. It's getting to be almost 2 months now. Just saying, you know, we're mad as heck. And somebody's got to say something about it. Somebody's got to show that, you know, the economy of this country is in dire straits. And it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. So anyway, sorry to go off on that, but Janice, as far as what you're saying is, you know what, I don't think of any of this as any big failure. You know, I don't. You know, I'm very proud. I stand tall about what we achieved. This was a huge world-class expedition. We were out there motoring across, and to go through two of those stings and still be courageous enough and have the team, you know, ready to try to still go onward and get over there, as I said, we're all very... very proud, and so the journey was worth it. I'm so glad that I spent my last 2 years the way I did, you know, with the passion, with the unwavering conviction. I'm glad about it, but I say, why can't you get both? You know, sometimes we can't get the destination. A friend dies of cancer and is only 46 years old, as my good friend Lisa Olshansky did. You know, never smoked a day in her life and died of lung cancer with the same cancer that Dana Reeve had. It hits quickly and you're gone. And so she fought, and she went in peace and with grace, because that was a battle she wasn't going to win. And she just tried to look back at the journey of her 46 years and appreciate what she did have. And so I admire that. But here I am, as you know, Kathleen, you started this whole program to come full circle to say, the ocean is still there.
Right.
I'm still here.
Right.
And so my dream doesn't have to be over. Why can't I have the journey and the destination?
Yeah.
You know, that's where I am right now.
Did you?
I appreciate what you're saying, Janice. I really do.
Right. Yeah.
I try not to, like, sit around, you know, in like, devastated disappointment every minute, every day, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think there's something Because I went through this in my life, too. When my mom died some years ago, but my dad died fairly recently, you know, 4 years ago, 2 days from now. And, boy, that hit me like a ton of bricks. I just, you know, I had a heart attack a few months later, and I was just, I thought I was going to die. It was horrible. But I'm wondering if, about the significance of your mom's death, and I'm wondering if you had a chance to talk to her about this swim before she went.
You know, I didn't. My mom, first of all, she had Alzheimer's and those last 8 years, which she died in 2007, actually. So, you know, by the time I even thought of this, my mom was gone.
Mm.
And actually, oh, there's so much to say about it. We got closer. We always loved each other. There was never a question of love, but there wasn't closeness. I already mentioned when your caller Bill was on the air that I went through childhood sexual abuse, and you know, there's always a triangle there. If the father's the abuser, where's the mother?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes the mother, it's not so clear-cut as she chose the father. It's just for her own psychological survival. She didn't protect me. She stood by him. And so you can imagine, just set up that scenario. It never ate into my love for my mom, but my closeness to her and trust of her, it wasn't good, you know, all those years. And I wish now I could have all those years back, and I would have been the leader, you know, to find the compassion and really understand what had happened to her as a child, you know, which brought her to all that behavior. But when she came into Alzheimer's, and thank goodness she never went to the desperate end of it. She always recognized me and my sister. She was never, you know, let's say that gone. But she was childlike, and she was, you know, had lost a lot. And those last 8 years, we were never so close. We talked and sat and held hands and put a strawberry up in front of us and gazed at it for 20 minutes before eating it. You know, we were in the moment, and we found a tenderness for each other. But she never really understood the swimming. She was proud of me, you know, sort of that I had character. That's what she was proud of, that I pursued goals. She was a big ballroom dancer, and she knew what it was like to work towards something. But the actual swimming itself, she never really understood it that much. And even if we had had a conversation about me wanting to do another big swim, we would have quickly switched to, you know, what, she was French, you know, what great shoes are out these days.
Thanks very much, Janice, for the call. Let's go to Jan in Oshkosh. Hi, Jan.
Hello. And hello, Diane.
Hi, Jan.
It's been a long time. I don't know if you remember me, but I remember you because you're 19. You're up at Camp Accomack.
Oh.
And you were a counselor.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that is stretching back now.
And you swam a lot.
Yes, there's a camp up Jan's referring to a beautiful Northwoods camp up about 4 hours north of Toronto. And it was really designed and founded by the swimming coach in the 1920s of the University of Michigan, who realized that swimmers get burned out. So he built this beautiful camp, you know, one of those gorgeous tree, you know, haven camps up in Canada, where swimmers from University of Michigan could go up and swim in these beautiful lakes in the summer, so they wouldn't be
nice.
So bored going up and down and up and down a pool. So I used to go up there in the 1970s and train for the marathon swims there. So, Jan, it's so great to talk to you. How are you?
I want to say one thing, that you gave a speech, I don't know if you remember this one, on Key Island for our Sunday, you told everyone that you should always read things that were inspiring and then memorize them, and by God, I've done that since. Congratulations.
Well, I must say I don't remember that, but that sounds like good advice.
So you'll do it yourself, huh?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, thanks, Jan, very much for the call. More phone calls in a moment. Diana Nyad is our guest this hour, extraordinary swimmer. We're talking about a lot of things with her, but she came to mind, and many of us followed her closely as she attempted twice in the last couple months to swim from Cuba to Florida. She is now 62 years old. She is going to do this again. And this is from a woman. I mean, she's incredibly athletic, and she does very long bike rides and is in terrific shape. But she had not been in the water for 31 years, burned out. It is understandable from swimming, but she re-entered the water and trained for this. And she says, even though some listeners have said that's all you need to do, I can hear that she's going to do it again next summer. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to calls, Laura in Manitowoc. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What prompted me to call was the couple of previous callers who said that you've accomplished so much, and I sure agree with them. The things that you've done are just phenomenal, Diana. And I was sort of disheartened to hear them say that what you've done is, in some sense, enough. And I just wanted to make the comment that every single thing that you have done leading up to the point that you're at right now, you know, has gotten you here, and that don't lose sight of the fact that your abilities are really phenomenal and so much beyond what most people can do, and your ability to be able to even make this attempt. You know, there's only a handful of people in the world that
could do this. Right.
Will ever have the opportunity to do that. So I just wanted to say, go for it.
All right, Laura. That's what I want to hear.
She's listening. It is true that you are, there are just, how many people in the world, a handful, if that, who could even think about being able to do this, Diana?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I mentioned Steve Munitonis before, you know,
right.
who sort of is the authority of ocean water swimming today. And I hadn't followed the sport in all these, you know, 3 decades I was away from it, and I hadn't realized how much it had grown. I mean, there are thousands. Now, you know, the triathlon has burgeoned also all over the world, very popular. But ocean swimming is has gotten to be huge. And there are people doing, you know, phenomenal swims, not quite as long as what I'm talking about, and you're probably right. I'm not saying people aren't capable of it, but people aren't doing these really way beyond the imagination extreme swims. But there are lots of people getting in there now, you know, swimming shorter distances, but still incredibly impressive, in oceans all over the world these days, which was not the case when I was swimming back in the 70s. It was pretty, you know, it was a pretty eccentric enterprise back then.
Yeah. Well, tell me how you, I've been swimming since I was 5, and I consider it a great thing when I go a half hour in the pool 3 days a week. I can't imagine training for this. Swimming is not that kind of endurance swimming. You really use every single muscle in your body. It's a tiring thing to do. You're tired. You sleep well at night because you've been for a half hour, at least a half hour swim. For me, how in the world do you train the body for this? I ask you as a swimmer. I'm just astounded that you can do that.
Yeah, it's, sorry, that's my dog.
Hi,
buddy.
You
do appreciate, you know, the body. I mean, you know, they've done all these studies for, I don't know, it's been at least a century now, as to which sports use more muscles in the body and produce the highest cardiovascular system. And it's sort of a tie between swimming and cross-country skiing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and that, you know, right there in your neck of the woods, you know, cross-country skiing is so huge all across Wisconsin. And so people understand that when you use the entire body, upper and lower body, in full range of motion, and it's nonstop, and the cardiovascular system is at first under distress because you're asking constantly. It just needs oxygen to take this full range of motion. And in swimming, there's a lot of resistance. Your arms are underwater pressing on a pretty hard surface, which is water. You know, they're not just going through air. So, you know, it is a tough grind on the body. And once you get in shape for it and you start and you've developed a really efficient stroke and you're gliding across the top rather than struggling, you know, sort of ramming your way through the water,
now it's, you know, not so hard. And now it's a matter of more and more hours and putting more and more pressure on the shoulders. Like, once I started to get in shape for this, you know, I could go for, 4 hours. I could go for 4 hours and glide along and feel great. But once I bumped that up that next day and tried to do eight, I wasn't ready for that yet. The shoulders were like, ouch, please stop. I can't take the pressure. So it took a while to build up. But I tell you, when I started to really, you know, get into it each year, these two past years in the winter and spring and moving toward early summer, I was doing multiple 10-hour swims, 11 hours, 12 hours, 13,
incredible,
14, 15-hour swims. And it's tough on the body, but you know what? I think it's tougher on the mind to keep focusing for all those hours when you're so isolated.
Right.
I think it's actually tougher on the mind.
Hmm. Oh, I think it's tough on the body, too. I can't imagine it, but maybe if you're you, it's not as tough. Andre in Green Bay. Hi, Andre.
How you doing, Kathleen?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Good.
I have a question, kind of a two-part question. I was just curious that 30 years ago, when your guest climbed out of the pool for the last time and decided that was going to be it, what did she use and how was she able to cope with her path, and what kind of struggles did she go through over that 30 years not having swimming and that relaxation to take her mind away from what she went through? And two, does she have any children, and does she allow any of them to swim? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Andre.
Well, you know, I don't know. That first question I don't relate to so much is that when I quit swimming, when I was 30 years old, I was ready to quit. You know, I accomplished everything except Cuba that I wanted to accomplish. I was ready to become a sports journalist. I had an offer by the Wide World of Sports, which is, you know, was the crowning glory of sports television at that time, and started traveling around the world. I mean, you know, for 10 years that I worked for Wide World, so that was from age 30 to 40, I was, you know, on one Saturday I'd be in Tokyo covering the World Table Tennis Championships. The next Saturday I'd be in Zermatt, Switzerland, covering the World Cross Country Ski Championships. And the next week I'd be, you know, somewhere else, and I covered many Olympic Games and the New York Marathon and the Iditarod in Alaska, and did documentaries and swimming with whales in Argentina. So I wasn't, you know, I was done. I retired from sports, and I was full on embracing a new life as a sports journalist and storyteller. I did a lot of public speaking, and then, you know, the next decade came, and there was more of the same. I wasn't with ABC anymore, but I worked for Fox Television Sports, and I worked for National Public Radio, you know. So, it's not like there was a big hole in my life in missing swimming. That wasn't the truth. And the second part of that is, I don't have my own children, but I am very close to a number of children, starting with my nephew, who's not a child anymore. He's 33. But since the day he was born, he's like my son, as well as my sister's son. And I adore him and have been involved with his development all the way. And now he's just graduated from Berkeley Journalism School, and he's making documentary films, and he's actually making a documentary film about this whole last 2 years of my life.
Is he? Oh, great.
Yeah, it's just
great.
Awesome. It's awesome. So, but he's not a swimmer, and I don't care if he's a swimmer. He's, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you swim. You just gotta find whatever your passion is. That's all.
Yeah. And when will we be able to see the documentary, Diana?
You know, well, now that he knows and is duly, you know, worried and aghast that I'm going to try it again next summer, you know, it would be done now, and he'd be finishing up. So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with it. But right now he's just looking through. He has about 500 hours of footage, you know, so it's a mammoth operation. Now he's working with an assistant editor, just sitting, going, culling through all this footage. And as I told you, he's coming over today to show me some of the jellyfish thing footage. So I don't know when it'll be out, but you'll follow it. I think it's going to be a work of art. It's going to be a great film.
Yeah, great. Charlie in Rochester, Minnesota. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, hello. I'm kind of laughing because when I was a little kid, I used to assume that before Christopher Columbus set eyes on Cuba in the 1490s, that people would swim back and forth between Cuba and Florida all the time, but I guess not. Anyway, what I'm curious about is how is all of this funded? You have people sending you various types of suits you could wear, and there's a crew following you when you swim. How is all of that funded?
And we have less than a minute left, Diana.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't been easy, I'll tell you the truth, Charlie. A lot of corporate partners and individual people have said, wow, this is exciting, it's huge, we want to support you, but what if you don't make it? What if you die? What if it never happens? So it's kind of a risky thing, you know. But these companies, they think it's inspiring, and they know that people are tuned into it, and they think it's a high adventure, and it's a world record, and so they want to be involved with it. So lots and lots of people, you know, from the bathing suits to boats to, you know, I could just name airfare, you know, all kinds of things have gotten mostly funded by people giving services and products.
Yeah. Well, Diana, thank you so much for being with us. And I love what I'll take a lot from this interview, but to be the best friend that you can be, that's equally as inspiring.
Good, good.
Thank
you. It's been my pleasure, Kathleen. You're wonderful, so articulate, and I appreciate your show because, you know, so many of them you do, you don't get a chance to express yourself. It's like, you know, 20-second answers and you're done.
Yeah, well, yeah, we have an hour, and thank you very much. It wouldn't have been a great hour if it weren't for Diana Nyad, that's for sure. I've always wanted to interview her. That was fun. And she's going to swim again, so now we can, maybe we'll play this interview right before she does it again. That would be fun. Well, yeah. We'll do that. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in Milwaukee. Until tomorrow.